Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast recorded at the Cambridge School, a Christian classical school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education worth pursuing. On today's episode, you'll hear a conversation between Jeff and Colleen Dong. Colleen has been associated with Cambridge for almost a decade. She's worked as an aide, a kindergarten teacher, a logic school teacher, and a rhetoric school writing tutor. So she gets Cambridge at almost every level and is uniquely suited to talk about what it means when we say that we teach with the end in mind. You'll hear us talk about why kindergarten is especially important, why it's not just kindergarten. We had a lot of fun with this conversation. In fact, I could not restrain myself and I hopped in towards the end. So if you want to hear Colleen and I talk about the relationship between the rhetoric stage and what it means to teach a senior and how that parallels her own experience with kindergartners, stay tuned. We may have to break this one up into two episodes, so look for that because we went long. But without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Jeff Yoder.
Hello, Colleen Dong. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is fun. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know.
And you're about to have a baby.
I know.
That's amazing.
I think I'm 10 days away from my due date or
something
like that.
So you're not teaching here currently?
Not currently. Right. I wish I was.
I know, but you still help us in so many ways. So it's great. Thank you for that. So I thought we would first ask you who you are and where'd you come from?
Okay. So I'm originally from San Diego. I was raised here, and I studied at Azusa Pacific University, and I got my bachelor's in English and specifically studying creative writing.
Nice.
When I graduated, I knew I wanted to come back to San Diego, and originally I wanted to be in some sort of publishing or editing type of role. But then I heard about the Cambridge School from some families that I knew, and I just was really fascinated by it. And so I just wanted to learn a little bit more about it. And after learning more about the school, I decided to apply. And I had an interview with Jean just for an aide position because I didn't have a background in education or anything. And I just really valued and enjoyed my conversation with her. And so I just told her, I'll take any position you give me. I just want to work with you. I want to hear more about this. I want to be a part of this. I want to support it. And she said, well, we have some aide positions open for the following year. This was like in May. So she was talking about the next school year. And I said, I would be really interested in that. And I told her specifically, but the youngest grade I would aide for is fourth grade.
I wondered, what grade did you want to come in
on? I told her that's the absolute youngest I would go, which is pretty bold for just after saying, you know, I want to be here and support you. But I just did not want to work with a younger age group than that. And so I told her, I think I'd work really well with sixth grade, maybe fifth grade, and the youngest I'll go is fourth grade. And then I got contacted that I got the position, but they didn't know what grade yet. And so the first day that I came to work, they told me I was in the kindergarten classroom.
Awesome.
And I was really, really surprised. And to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed because I just didn't think that that was my strength. I didn't think that was my forte. So I felt like I wasn't going to be serving the school very well. And
what do you think were some of the assumptions that you had of what a kindergarten class was like?
That's a really good question. And I think it's one that kind of gets to what most people think of when they think of kindergarten. And that is just, I thought it was going to be lots of almost borderline daycare.
Right.
I thought it was going to be really trying on my patience. And I just kind of pictured it as chaotic.
Right.
And I didn't really, I don't really like that. And I didn't really want to be a part of that. And so that's what I had in mind.
Right.
And I didn't really get to see what it really looked like until the school year started.
Okay.
And I just became completely captivated by what we do here in kindergarten.
Wow.
I was just completely blown away. And I was just so captured by the way the classical elements are incorporated into the classroom, just like the incredible wonder that the students have and how it's cultivated in the curriculum. And I haven't left the kindergarten classroom since. I just wow. absolutely love it. That was 9 years ago. This okay. is my ninth year yes. relationship with Cambridge.
So you aided for how many years?
So I aided for a full school year. And okay. then the following year, the teacher I was working with was pregnant. So I took over for her when she Great. Went on her maternity leave. So it was about a year and a half of okay. aiding. And then once I took over the classroom for her maternity leave, they offered me the other kindergarten classroom position that had opened up for the following year. So I became the lead teacher in that classroom.
Great. Mm-hmm. So as the years went on, then you went back to school? Can you tell
right.
me about that?
Yes. So let's see. I think I taught full time for a year. And after the first, I think it was after the first year, DJ did, or during the first year, DJ did a teacher in service on logic and rhetoric, which I wasn't terribly familiar with either of those fields of study. And I was really fascinated by what he was saying in the presentation. And it just really just kind of aligned with how I think and mm-hmm. what I'm interested in and kind of my analytical framework that I operate with. And so after hearing about it, I looked into just the field of rhetoric a little bit more, spoke to DJ about it and where he studied and all of that, and decided to try to do school while okay. teaching.
Wow.
And so I went back and pursued my master's in rhetoric while teaching full time at San Diego State. And it took me about 4.5 years to complete it, which typically it takes about 2. So I was on a much slower track. But I just found it to be so life-giving to me personally and professionally. And I think it was one of the best things I did for my teaching career.
That's great. And so you taught kindergarten. There was another class. You did end up teaching some older kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I think it was about halfway through my master's, the administration asked me if I would be willing to teach one 7th and 8th grade class. And that's their speech and debate class. And when they asked me about that, I told them I've never debated and I don't have any expertise in that at all. And then when I looked at what they do in the class, it's really just a pre-rhetoric class.
Okay.
It's really just building that rhetorical lens and those skills and starting to get them introduced to those concepts through studying primarily speeches.
Okay.
And so once I saw that, I said, oh, I can do that.
That's great.
But I'm not able to do any of the, you know, competitive debate side or anything.
Right, right.
So I had about a year of teaching that class as well. So I think my kindergartners were in PE or recess or something, and I would hop upstairs and teach the 7th graders once a week and then teach the 8th graders once a week and then come back downstairs and finish my day with the kindergartners.
That's amazing.
And then on Tuesdays, drive down to SDSU and take my class in grad school. So that was my day for about a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was really wild. I remember seeing, I took a picture of my desk one time because I had like a stack of crafts and like kindergarten dictation papers to look at. I had a stack of 7th grade responses to grade, and then I had my like reader for my course.
Right.
And I was like, who am I? This is the weirdest thing, like pile on your desk to have. And if someone walked in and looked at this, they would have
right.
no idea what this person does.
That's funny.
So it was pretty wild. Yeah.
It seems though that it might make sense here at the Cambridge School to see all of those things on your desk. So, you know, a lot of times, being in the advancement office, we'll have new parents come in and think, oh, we'll wait a few years and try a different school
right.
and a regular curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's really just kindergarten or it's just first grade. So tell us, you know, is it just kindergarten? Can we just wait until it gets good? later.
Right. I think that's something that a lot of parents run into when they first find the school and look at the school. We always rightly tell them it's best to get in early and get in on the kind of the ground floor and work your way through the curriculum that's been scaffolded. But I know a lot of parents struggle with the idea that it's either just preschool, it's just kindergarten, we can do that anywhere. This is offered all over town. But I think that it's not until they're in the kindergarten classroom and they see what their child is doing and learning and the questions that they're asking and being asked that they see how different it really is. So at Cambridge, the grammar school as a whole, and then obviously by extension, kindergarten, is really informed and framed completely differently than your average elementary school classroom. So what I mean by this is that our goals and our motivations and what we have in mind for our students really looks different than a kindergarten classroom you might find down the street, because our goals for our kindergartners are much bigger, much broader, and they actually are the same goals that our 7th, 8th grade 11th, 12th grade teachers would have for our students.
Okay.
The whole school is aligned in what they want for the student and where they want them to go. Because when I look at my kindergarten students, I'm not just thinking about who they're going to be as 7-year-olds in first grade. I'm thinking about who they're going to be as 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds. And that's exactly what our upper school teachers are doing as well.
Right.
So this really informs the classroom differently. And the curriculum at Cambridge was actually scaffolded with an end in mind. So we were able to look at what we wanted our graduating students to know and to love and to be motivated by. And we took that all the way down to kindergarten rather than the other way around. And if you start with the other way around, your goal in a kindergarten classroom is really to get them to first grade. And it's really just to check off your learning objectives and that sort of thing for the year. But what we're doing is looking at objectives that go way beyond first grade. Of course, we have things in mind that we want them to know by the end of the school year. And we make sure that they hit those kind of road marks. But what we're really looking at is a much further, much longer term goal, which makes you teach differently. You're going to ask different questions. You're going to care for those conversations differently. You're going to cultivate things differently than if you know you only have them for so many months of the year and then you're done.
Right.
It's a lot different motivation, and it's a lot different heart in the classroom.
Interesting. Are there specific things that you do that are part of the curriculum that kind of connect to maybe the logic school or the rhetoric school later on, things that you do that no other kindergarten class would do?
Right. So I think another way we're uniquely informed is simply by the classical model. And I've heard it said before that you really can't have one of the three stages by itself at any point. You're always going to be informed by the other two, because you're either going to be working off of where they've come from and looking toward where they're going, or you're simply looking at where they're going. So I really like the idea that you can't be a true grammar school without understanding and using and drawing on ideas from logic and rhetoric school. And so I think what we do is first of all, we really know where they're going globally. But then we have conversations amongst the teachers, amongst the faculty, with admin, that help us understand exactly what they're going to be doing in those classes. So even as grammar school teachers, we have a pretty good idea of what they're going to be studying and looking at and being asked about in seventh grade and beyond.
Okay.
And so that helps us shape our lessons much more intentionally, much more critically, and more robustly, because we have this idea of, okay, we need them to know how to read before they go to first grade, but then in several years, they're going to be studying this book. So I might be asking different questions in my literature lessons, knowing that they're going to be coming across this particularly complex piece of literature in eighth grade that I want them to just get going, just get started, just have a posture towards that. I don't obviously expect them to have conversations that I would expect a 12 or 13-year-old to have, but I just want their shoulders turned there a little bit when they're with me rather than just focus on the story we're reading.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Could you give us an example of
like
something specific that you do with the kids?
So one way that I really worked to get this idea going was really through incorporating some rhetorical ideas and strategies and devices into my classroom while I was teaching and studying that at the same time. And before I started working on my master's at all, I actually went to a classical conference and came across this session called something titled like Incorporating Rhetoric into the Grammar School Classroom. And I got so excited because that was becoming a passion of mine, something I wanted to pursue and learn more about. And so I got really excited. I went to the session, and what she did perfectly speaks to how I think most people would incorporate quote-unquote rhetoric into the classroom, because her entire presentation was about how to incorporate oral presentation into an elementary school classroom.
Okay.
Which A, we already do,
right.
And B, is such a narrow view of rhetoric.
Interesting. Okay.
It's like, it's so, it almost has blinders on to what you can really do. And so, and I had only heard DJ talk about rhetoric at this point, and I walked away kind of knowing she had missed it already. Mm. And so that kind of stirred me even more to look at, how can you actually incorporate this day to day? Because it's so much more than just skills with oral presentations,
right,
which is what she talked about. It was all about like eye contact and where your feet should be facing and how you can put in an oral presentation after a history unit that you finish up and that sort of thing, which again, all super important skills,
right,
all skills we want our students to learn. But I just wouldn't classify that as our primary way that we incorporate rhetoric in the grammar school.
Right.
So I just felt like that really missed the mark. And after I began working on my studies and everything, I just really saw some powerful ways that we can use rhetoric to inform our classrooms and make our lessons really robust, because it's much more of, at least for me when I was teaching, it was much more of using a totally different lens on what you were doing and seeing things from this new perspective, which makes you ask really different questions and dive into things more deeply, as well as understanding what your five-year-olds are going to be looking at when they're 16 or 17 in their rhetoric courses. Mm-hmm.
So you were hearing about rhetoric as just oral presentation and specific
right.
things you can do. And you're like, there's more. And you talked about a lens
right.
Through which you can view different things. Can you tell us about just some examples that you do with the kids and how, I mean, how can five-year-olds really do rhetoric anyway?
Right. Okay. So I had a full year of teaching before I started my master's, as well as the aid time in the classroom. And once I started my studies, it was my first semester actually at SDSU. And I was back in the kindergarten classroom and I pulled out the literature story we were going to do for the day, which actually is not a very well-known story. Like anybody read this in elementary
right.
school. It's kind of uniquely picked for one of the units we do in science. And So I pulled out this book and I was reading it to the students, and I heard myself asking completely new questions and noticing completely new things about the story that I had probably read this book four or five times before, both in listening to it, teaching it, and preparing for the lessons in the past. And I just realized that I was teaching this rhetorically to the students. I feel like most elementary school literature lessons are really focused on comprehension, vocabulary building, thematic ideas, that sort of thing.
Right.
But the conversation we had that day when I was using a much more rhetorical lens and noticing devices, strategies, and things that were being used in the book became, for me, a completely life-changing lesson that I taught. And it made the book connect with the students in a totally new way. And I started to really see that these books could be used to build empathy and generosity and charity and really valuable skills and emotions that the students are really working on at that age and are sometimes still really unfamiliar with.
Right.
So this book, it's called Without You. And she's like one of my favorite children's authors now because I just was so fascinated by what she did in this book and the way she wrote it. Because something she does that I never, I'm almost embarrassed to say it now, but I never noticed it before when before I had taken my rhetoric courses, is that she moves narrators throughout the book. So it's about a penguin family, which we study the penguins in science, so it all is integrated and everything. But she moves from the dad, the father, penguin, male penguin, being the narrator, to the child, the little baby penguin being the narrator. And you don't catch it right away. And so when I was reading it and I noticed that the narrators were switching, that's on purpose. That's going to do something. That's going to do something to you while you're reading it. That's going to ask you to take a new perspective. And for a child, it's really quick to move narrators because it's literally from page to page. And that's a really complex, really nuanced idea for them because almost all children's literature stories are told from the once upon a time narrator. And so this one was not only what we would traditionally call a first person narrator, but it moved which quote unquote person you are following in the story. And so I realized that, and I needed my students to realize that and connect with that idea because it was going to show up in the story and it was going to do something really powerful if I could harness it because she's trying to do something powerful with it. And so essentially what I did through the story was I almost always teach through questions. So I just had to ask things like, who's speaking now? Who's talking? How do you know? And the great thing about children's literature is there's always illustrations. And so the illustrator of the story suddenly took a picture that was a really zoomed in picture on the egg to also kind of cue in the students about the switch of the narrator and to show them, okay, now the little baby is talking and here, look, we're looking only at the egg. That's the only thing in the picture.
And did the students respond well? Did they pick it up?
Absolutely. Yeah. When I asked them who's speaking now, when it switched from the dad penguin to the baby penguin, they were able to make that connection when I pointed it out. And then when I just asked, how do you know? They were able to pick up clues not only from the text but also from the image, which now we're getting into visual rhetoric as well.
Right.
So this is a double whammy on the rhetoric for this lesson. And then in the book also, there's sort of this like what I kind of call a chorus in the book, more toward a song. And it's a repeated page where the same words are repeated each time. And using the images, you can kind of pick up that the first time it's said by the baby. The second time it's said by the father. And the third time it's said, the image that's used shows finally, because if you know about Emperor Penguins, it's all about the reunion of the family at the end. Okay. So finally, when the chorus comes about the third time, all three family members are in the image. And so we've heard the baby say it once already. We've heard the dad say it once already. Now the mom is involved. But who's speaking now? She leaves it open-ended on purpose, because now all three of them share this connection. They share this emotion. They've all said it before. They've all used those words to each other before. And so suddenly the students are able to make the connection that those three beings share a similar feeling right now. And maybe I share similar feelings with some adults in my life, some important adults in my life. And what other feelings did those adults show in this story that I haven't paid attention to? And in what ways can I pay attention to them? And in what ways can I show compassion for that as their son or daughter? So leaving it open-ended at the end is really strategic, because it leaves the conversation open for that. And if you read it well, you can pick up on that. And if you ask the right questions, you can have a conversation with your students that asks them to just contemplate that for a moment.
Right.
And even if they don't fully land on that, even if they don't fully walk away thinking, wow, I think my parents feel that too, the same mm-hmm. thing I feel. Mm-hmm. It still asks them to work with me on it. And it still right. asks them to step out of themselves for a moment, all of which I think are really valuable ways to use a book with a child.
It's just amazing. It's just so much more than just a story, just words and pictures on a page.
Absolutely. And the way a children's book would typically be read is exactly that, just right. words on the page, which is really a disservice to the story, the intentions in the strategies, and your relationship with them. I think a lot can be built through that time. Mm-hmm. And that that lesson, typically reading that story would take like 10 11 minutes at the most.
Right.
Because you're going to pepper in some comprehension questions in there.
Right.
But I think we sat on the rug and talked about that book for no less than 35 or 40 minutes.
Wow.
And I had 100% engagement the entire time.
That's amazing.
And I think it's because the conversation mattered, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It was just a different way to look at the book. And I had, usually I put my books out on display after we read them, and then seasonally I would rotate them out. And I rotated that book out a month after we had finished it. And it was like this huge loss in the classroom. Like everyone wanted to know where that book was, which told me again that we'd done well
right.
reading it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, just because I have kids that have been through rhetoric, I know that there's like 1,000 different narrators. That's an exaggeration, but tons of narrators.
Much more than you think.
Yeah. Though. So I thought we would bring the expert in here, Mr. DJ Goodweiler, to talk with you about some of the connections between what you're doing
sure.
and what they're doing.
Thanks for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a tour, reach out to the advancement office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast. So be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review, and we'll see you next time.